Hello there. Once again, I'm Gabriel, back with a very interesting topic, artificial intelligence in human resource management. We will be talking today about 9 chapters. We're talking about how AI is used in recruiting, how AI is used in human resource management, how AI is helping human resource as a function to come up, how AI is helping in people analytics, and we will also look into case studies of AI. Now, to just give you a glimpse of it, I mean, what we are talking about, that's the first chapter. So we'll be talking about what are the HR functions and how artificial intelligence is, you know, migrating to it, coming up with it. So I hope you know a little bit of artificial intelligence, but just a thought. What is intelligence? I mean, just start thinking from that perspective. How do you think intelligence matters and why it is called artificial intelligence? To give you a brief background, not with a data specific concentration, in the 1950s and 60s, a group of researchers doing a research in one of the colleges in US came up with something known as artificial intelligence. Now, when they came up with that, it was not very critical as to what exactly artificial intelligence is all about. What they understood, what they didn't understand, how did they understand, what is the thought process, how they want to do it. There was no typical guideline or process. They knew this is kind of a programming code that we need to do, and with the help of it. Time has flown. I mean, we are looking at 50 years down the line. It has come up huge. You find chatbots, you find there are a lot of tools being used for AI. But what you need to understand is, see, when we talk about intelligence from a human perspective or a human psychology perspective, intelligence is something which is there. I mean, if I talk, this is the biggest intelligence that humans carry. Now, you also have to understand that humans have something called as cognitive brilliance. Now, what is cognitive brilliance? Cognition by itself makes you to understand how do you process information, how do you interpret information, how do you understand information, and what is the thought process around it. So, when you're looking at cognition, that means, for example, today when I said HR functions and artificial intelligence, your brain might have sensed something. So we are talking about artificial intelligence, we are talking about HR functions. So your brain immediately started recognizing what is going to happen or what will it happen. That's cognition. That's the brilliance that human brain have. That's how the human brain functions. They know the typical way what is going to happen. Now imagine, given a problem statement, let's say somebody said that you have to recruit, let's say, 6 people in the current month or in the next 2 months. They immediately started doing a back calculation. Okay, this is the number of resumes I have to find out or source. Then I have to send it to the hiring manager for, you know, understanding whether this is right or wrong or what way the process starts. So that's cognition. So your brain has started feeding the data itself. However, when giving you a scope, let's say you are reading resumes. Now, generally, the people who are the best at reading resumes, what I have seen, they typically will take 15-20 minutes to process the resume. They process the data in the resume, to understand the data in the resume, and then they will start sourcing. You don't have a keyword perspective in your brain. Okay, the moment I see something inside the resume, I come to know, okay, this is the word called HR or this is the word called function, and then I process it. Imagine if the human brain, so the processing speed is at question. It's not the cognition part. The cognition is good. You're reading a resume, you're trying to find out, you're sourcing something. What if that processing speed is decreased by something, by a chip or by giving you something as a power to, you know, identifying in a faster place. So if you're taking time to read a resume for 20 minutes, what if I give you something which will reduce it to 10 minutes? Now, when you amalgamate both these two things, the cognitive part and the processing speed part, when you kind of take it together, that's what we call an artificial intelligence. Now, I'm not getting into a definitive way of what researchers or scientists say as artificial intelligence is, but that's how typical of what is artificial intelligence. The intelligence which is artificial, where the processing speed is much, much more faster. So you create something which can read a resume less than what human can read a resume and give the result at a faster pace. Now, typically when I look at perspective wise, there are three types of AI. Generally, I'm not getting into the aspect of what is machine language or what is neural processing language. I'm not getting into that, or neural networks. Very simple, three types of AI: narrow AI, general AI, super AI. What is narrow AI? It is meant for a specific task. So I give an input that, you know, facial recognition or let's say doing a specific task in a faster way is a narrow AI. General AI is divided into two. One is the normal general AI and one is the advanced general AI. Normal general AI or artificial intelligence, when we speak about one common thing as chatbots, or, you know, doing something which is beyond a certain level. So if you go by a definition perspective, it says what humans can do. So calculations, reasoning, all those things put together. And super AI, just to give you an example of a super AI, if you have watched the movie Transcendence, that particular movie where Johnny Depp plays the protagonist character and he puts his brain to the artificial intelligence machine, and what happens after that, it's what we call it super AI. People are saying advanced general AI will take another a decade or plus to reach that level, and super AI, we do not know. It can be a reduced timeline, but currently what we have, we are unable to do it. The biggest question that a lot of people ask me before I get into the HR functions and artificial intelligence is, will our jobs go away? Now, I have two folds answer to it. One, yes and no. Yes, if you do not upgrade yourself to the artificial intelligence factors, if you're not aware of artificial intelligence factors, if you're not knowing what artificial intelligence is doing with terms to HR, then yes, you will lose your job because market is moving very, very fast pace. But if you adapt yourself to what are the tools available in the market for HR functions, for recruiting, for learning and development, for people analytics, for soft skills assessment, and all this part, there you will be able to not only save your job, but you might become one of the best known person in the field of HR using artificial intelligence. So there are a lot of things that we'll talk about in various chapters, but I thought I'll give you a brief to start of what we are going to deal with. So to start off with, since we spoke about HR function, artificial intelligence, to just give you an introduction of it. So today employees, you know, are the driving force. I mean, if you look at any successful organization, it's people what matters. The process part is where AI is coming in. So it's a combination. It's still not in isolation. HR is definitely one of the critical function for an organizational growth. And it's also the development driver for it. You know, on the core, quality HR contributes to the success of the employees, for the performance and the well-being and the growth. And HR is becoming one single critical function which will contribute to the success of the entire organization. Today, I mean, if I talk about HR 5 to 7 years back, we knew HR as a HR generalist role. But today when we look at, we have TA, talent acquisition, we have TM, talent management, we have HRBP, which is human resource business partner, we have exit interviews, and then we have the normal HR of calculating salaries and every other aspect of it. So HR roles are also getting critical, and it being created as a branch of the main HR as a critical function. So we will delve, we will deep dive and understand what the thought process is about it. Now, when we talk about human resource management, you know, one of the biggest thing that today people ask me, Gabriel, what do you think? It's the first line. It's the line which says this line: attracting and retaining top talent. I mean, you go to any HR today with the thought process of, you know, working about. See, I have worked for almost 20 plus years into the HR field, particularly into the domain of learning and development. But I was part of HR processes, policies. I understand what is strategic HR, I understand what is HRM, I understand what is performance management. And you know, everywhere, the first line remains like a keynote. It has to happen. How do you attract top talent and how do you retain top talent? So it's not only looking at the attracting piece, it's also looking at to retain it all about. Second is HR works towards creating a positive employer brand. Definitely. I mean, think about HR for a leading organization in your field. This guy is doing good. You have implementing competitive compensation. You have development by focusing on training and development opportunities to enhance employee skills and competencies. But you know, if you look at the second, third, and fourth point, but to me, the key is this one. The objectives of the HRM is to attract and retain top talent. Once you've attracted them, I mean, they should remain with you for a longer period of time so that you can use them as a benchmark or as a process. Now, today, I mean, I would say post-COVID, this has come a very, very highly influential as a function of an HR or an HRM, that is employee engagement. And there is a satisfaction survey happens. If you go to great places to work, which we call it GPTW, you know, the first thing that they check is the employee satisfaction survey. I was told by one of my colleagues in the HR that in the US, they're creating a chatbot which will measure employee engagement and satisfaction to understand how the thought process of the employees are going together, you know. So they are getting into that kind of a zone of recognizing the employee contributions. Second is how good are their work-life balance initiatives. So, you know, I just asked one of my counterparts in US asking about, you know, what kind of, they say they have a Q&A beginning every weekend. So if I talk about USL, they have a 4th of July weekend, then they have the other weekends, which are long weekends, and they try to understand what are the work-life balance initiatives they can take. And remember, this is not a super AI. So your input is there and they're doing a specific task. This is the narrow AI we are talking about. Then drive productivity, which is again the same thing, retention. See, today there is a term, and if you look at this positive organizational culture, in my 20 years career, I've never spoken about organizational culture in the last 5 years, pre and post COVID, which I could have spoken way back. So today they're looking at employee well-being, job satisfaction, and also a positive organizational culture. So there is a assessment of organizational culture, which is OCAI. If you go to Google and type in there, you will find what they do, how they retain, what are their thought processes from an employee perspective. So again, HR is becoming more and more employee-centric rather than the process-centric. Promoting diversity and inclusion. See, guys, today I go anywhere, the first question as a consultant I'm being asked, Gabriel, how do you implement diversity and inclusion? You know, what are the recruitment strategies when you're recruiting people from across corner of the room? And one of the biggest thing I want to highlight out here is, I mean, it's way back, although the incident is not very good, but there is a professor by the name Professor Ranajay Gulati, who does behavioral psychology lectures in Harvard, USA. Now, the incident that I was saying, which was not good, was the terrorist attack, and Taj Mahal Palace was attacked in Bombay, and things were not good. Now, after the entire incident was over, what they did was they tried to find out. Now, there were people in Taj Mahal Palace Hotel who had the shift ended and they could have easily went back home, but they stayed. So they started looking at how people coming from diverse background have their values, and they're incorporating them in their diversity recruitment strategies, which is diversity training program, ensuring employees equal opportunities. Enhance innovation, creativity, and inter-organizational collaboration. Another word is coming up. Like every other entity in the organization, the ultimate objective of the human resource management is to ensure companies' long-term sustainability. And guys, if you're taking specialization as HRM, remember this line. You have to ensure companies' long-term sustainability and manageability at a higher maturity level than its current level. You have to promote yourself. You have to always go on creating benchmarks. Now, just to let you know, the key HR functions that we are talking about. Now, these functions are, you know, there throughout, but just for your knowledge, human resource planning, that's how many people are on board, how many people have left, what is the recruitment plan, how are we recruiting, are we going campus, are we going consultant, are we hiring somebody. The second one is recruitment and selection. Again, today, if you go, I think most of the organizations that I've worked with, they go something called as behavioral event interviewing. So they're not doing typical recruitment. Even if they are doing a recruitment from the campus, they're typically using a competency-based interview and selection process. Performance management. I think AI will play a pivotal role because of the processing speed. Because I remember when I started my career, we used to give in 3 months' time. So if March was our annual appraisal time, from January we used to start looking at data and how what the review would happen. That processing speed is coming down. Now it's only a month. And if things go well, it might happen in a week. Learning and development, how can I use AI? We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it from an employee value proposition perspective. Now, what is employee value proposition? Just think for a few minutes or a few seconds. I mean, when you listen to this, what comes to your mind? So employee value proposition on a simpler term is nothing but the career pathing of each and every employee who has joined in the organization. So when I say an employee value proposition, it can be a hyper program. What is a hyper program? It is high performance, high potential program. Why am I using that? For succession planning. Why am I using succession planning? Go back to the first line, attracting and retaining talent. So by recruitment and selection, if I'm attracting the talent, so employee value proposition is for retaining that talent. Then there's career pathing, which is career planning, job function evaluation. There are job families, sales, operations, finance, HR, a lot of functions out there, retail, if I talk about retail industry. So how do I do a job function evaluation? Industrial relations, labor law compliance, information sharing, health and safety is becoming very crucial. Personal well-being, you know, I think a year back, one of the consultants known to me came to me and asked me, Gibril, do you know any guy who is very good in psychology? So I was like a little bit phased out, and I don't want to use the term as kind of. So I asked her, I mean, why are you looking at a psychological guy? No, we are thinking of creating a chief well-being officer of a company who will look into employees' mindset and happiness. A year back. So everyone is as excited as to create something for the employees, and you people will be part of it. Policy formulation, employee engagement, growth and succession planning, risk management, and administrative responsibilities. Now, these are key HR functions. You can get into any one of them. You can become a talent acquisition specialist, which will focus on recruitment and selection. You can be a talent management, which will focus on performance management. You can be part of LN, learning and development. You can be part of employee. In some companies, performance management covers career planning, employee value proposition, and learning and development together, because that's where the need comes out. But these are the key functions. How many of you have recruited anyone? So when you say HR planning, what comes to your mind? So the first thing that comes to your mind is, you know, right people for the right place for the right time. I mean, strategic goals is something very different. So how can I hire the right person for the right place or the right competencies? And that's where HR planning comes. So it's a continuous process. It's a data-driven process. So imagine a sales organization, sales-based organization might look at 12 salespeople at various regions. Now, regional differences is playing a pivotal role in HR planning. So if you're recruiting somebody in Calcutta, maybe the terminologies, the competencies might be the same. But when you're interviewing that person, maybe because of the psychological thought process, they might be different. And if you're recruiting for the same role in Bombay, it might be different. If you're recruiting for the same role in Delhi, it might be different. So that's how the HR planning comes into perspective. HR planning makes strategic decisions. So what is an organization's future needs? The organization's future need is nothing, but it starts with the understanding of where I want to be. So I was working with an organization as a consultant, and they gave me a strategic intention. You know, Gabriel, in the 5 years time, we are looking at to recruit 10,000 people worldwide. 10,000 people worldwide in 5 years, meaning 2,000 people a year. Now, 2,000 people a year, which means in a month, I'm looking at nothing less than around 200 odd people, 150 to 200 odd people. Now, when you say in a month, 150 odd people, that is globally. And even if I divide it into regional perspective or a country perspective, like okay, India, Singapore, Malaysia, US, UK, imagine the entire structure is different. You cannot have the same kind of HR planning for recruiting people in India and recruiting people in Singapore. Completely different perspective. So that's why HR planning is a strategic decision and envisioning in an organization's future needs. It considers kind and number of people, depending on the business requirement, to serve as an input for recruitment. the selection, the performance management, the learning and development, and all other HR functions. If you're good at HR planning, see, I did give you an understanding of when I'm saying considering. So globalization, technological advances, changes in the legal framework, you know, augmented hiring. When I say augmented hiring, for example, I was working with a company as a consultant, and they were hiring people in US from India, and the entire network was there from the calling perspective. So when I say calling perspective, so for example, if Apple is looking for a mobile developer or a Java developer or a backend developer, or let's say a full stack developer, those guys were in US. So there are a lot of, and when you're in US, there are a lot of federal laws that comes into. So changes in the legal framework, the dynamic business environment, and people in US, for example, there were jobs available in the US for $15 an hour to $50 an hour. So am I sourcing the right candidate for that particular, that depends on how my business environment is, how my technological advances are, because I cannot see the candidate. I might do an interview through a video call. So that's how globalization and HR planning plays a pivotal role. Okay. Recruitment and selection. I mean, this is the first part of HR that comes into the portfolio of HRM. I mean, today, in the, you know, 10 years ago or 5 to 7 years ago, there were people, the same guy who used to hire people used to manage them. Today, because it is becoming very challenging, and as I said in the previous slide, globalization, the laws, the labor laws, everything getting different. So you as a person have to also think that recruitment and selection comes into a very different tangent. If you're going for a campus hiring, what would be your mode of evaluation? If you're going for one-on-one hiring, what should be your mode of evaluation? So not only attracting, but selecting and engaging the right people is vital for organization's success. I remember I was part of the campus recruitment team once in a company, and we actually did an employee value proposition before starting the selection process. So we told them that if you join this organization, you as a candidate, you are starting at this level, let's say this is 0.0, and working for 1.5 years, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, this is where you go. And we had success stories for people who are in that company for more than 5 to 10 years and how they have grown over a period of time. So, you know, your recruitment and selection is not only meant for, I just go read the resume and just start saying, okay, can you describe about yourself? That those things are gone. Today's recruitment and selection is so dynamic that I can directly start with the projects that you have done. There will be no hard and fast rule that, you know, you have to go through, describe yourself, what are your strengths and weaknesses. The better part of it is, now it has become more competent using the competence factor. Again, a robust employer band, for example, if I talk about bigger institutes or any other institute where the campus hiring happens. So when you're going for a campus hiring, you know, when they come as a company, the first thing they look at is how that employer brand happens. So I, as a person who is doing MBA today or a PGDM today, or I'm doing a postgraduate, wherever I am, I look at the brand. I look at that employer brand, and that brand happens because of the recruitment selection. I'm not very aware of Google's selection policy, but if you go through the movie Internship, movie by Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, you will see how Google recruits people. And if they've shown that in a movie, my good guess is they do it in that way. So for a team to get selected, they have to go through various tasks and activities for a period of 3 to 6 months. And then only they recruit people. So when I say a great brand, it depicts work ethics and culture. It promotes diversity and inclusion, ensures employer growth and development. And most importantly, it clearly portrays organizational values and standards. I mean, I'm told that every year when Google goes for on campus, and if there is any other company, I don't want to name that company, this was given by me, someone who knows the data, Google attracts all the talent. Why? Because they depict all the four. They depict work ethics and culture. They promote diversity and inclusion, ensures employer growth and development, and clearly portrays the organizational values and standards. So be very keen to know as a data perspective. And I will speak about something when I get into learning and development. Google has done two projects, Project Oxygen and Project Aristotle, and I'll talk about it in a later when we do the LNOD piece. Businesses with excellent employer brands receive 50% more qualified applicants. I just gave you the data. Great brands with right sourcing strategies, channels make it possible to attract qualified and high potential candidates. Now, this might not be related to you, but just to give you an example, if I have to go for any mid to senior or senior to top management, there are only few consulting companies in India who provide that kind of thing. One is Manpower, then there is Adecco, then there is Randstad. Now, these are why these are as the brands, because they give you the candidates who are at that level, a benchmark upon itself, and high potential candidates. So today, every company is looking for a high potential candidate. They're not looking at a candidate where they can groom into. Yes, there are few organizations who are willing to take a candidate whose potential is moderate to high and willing to spend time on them, but most of the cases they're looking at high potential candidates. Technological advancements have gone beyond the roof, and I'll share certain tools in this particular chapter, and you can go to the website to check. I know for sure there is a recruitment tool used by DBS Bank Singapore to channelize recruitment technique. I'll give you the best example. Go to LinkedIn. When you today, LinkedIn has an AI has merged together. I'm talking about just a week's update. Now, when you're applying for something in LinkedIn, it gives you a very good first question. Does my skill matches? And there is an AI star. If you click on it, it will tell you in detail what the job description is and how your candidature matches with that job description. Previously, it used to have skill-based. So let's say you put in 10 skills and the job used to tell you, okay, 8 out of 10 matches, 5 out of 10 matches. And in one of my organizations that I worked as a head of LNOD, from a behavioral training perspective, I was recruited from LinkedIn. I'm talking about that's 2015, 2014, that time. And that's almost what, around 10 years ago. So technological advancements are creating a leverage for an organization and different stages. So today, if you go to AI, who is doing recruitment for you, the first processing time while reading the resume and giving you the right resume is the key. So various tools, what I know across the globe, gives you a 90 to 95% hit. So that means if you tell them that these are the resources, so it's works as a gateway, you know. So if the resume is coming here, this is the AI, and if this AI understands what is requirement, then it sources almost 90 to 94% of the right resume. So if there is 10 resumes sent, it will accept 9. And so on the process and different stages of the process. The second function of the HR is performance management. I don't have to tell you much about it. It's a process where the supervisors or the managers monitor for the performance and the organizational contribution. In today's performance management, slowly and steadily, the organizational contribution is coming into effect. So if you look at a performance management, which is based on KRA and KPI, based on that entire structure, in today's parlance, they are looking from a perspective wherein they are thinking how they can include the organizational contribution as a KRA. Now, will it be well taken, not well taken, that time will say. But currently, I have worked with two or three organizations where if you're into sales, so the percentage achieved as a departmental goal is your organizational contribution. So if you have achieved 90% of the organizational goals, then you have contributed X amount, and they're doing a weighted average from a regional perspective. Pharma companies have very well have this. So if I'm talking from a pharma perspective, every medical representative, when they go to a headquarter and the number of prescriptions they generate, they try to analyze the value of the prescription over a period of time and how much they are contributing to the headquarter. Now, they might not go to the larger extent of organizational contribution, but at least at the headquarter wise, they're doing it. It's very essential in ensuring the workers stay productive and engaged. I mean, obviously, I mean, if there was no performance management, why would I go ahead and do this? Good performance management involves strong leadership, clear goal setting, and open feedback. Technological advancements and adaptation of AI, many organizations are shifting from annual to biannual reviews. Now, here I have a different thought process. I worked with an organization when I started my career in 1999. I had biannual reviews or half-yearly reviews. But they're making it more frequently to weekly, fortnightly, and monthly basis. So what is happening is the entire association of performance management is starting from day one. So so when I started, I'll give you an example. When I started, I was told, Gabriel, you know, you have a good 6 months period to understand the business. When I see it today, they say, Gabriel, how? So if you look at a perfect job description, there is a 30, 60, and 90 day plan with you. That during these 30 days, this is what is expected out of you. In the next 60 days, this is what is expected out of you. And in the 90, this is what is expected out of you. So in the entire nutshell, that is what they're moving into from biannual or annual to more frequented automated services. I am told, as I go along with this lecture, there are organizations which have started implemented reviews. So they are doing it on their internet. So you have your KRA and your KPI is fixed. You have to just enter the numbers that has been reviewed by your supervisor. The moment you put in, it gives you a rating. And systems cannot be biased. So that's how. Organizations are using tools that provide 360 degree feedback. One of the most best tools should be used by HR, but one of the most lengthy tools that people avoid to. Why? Because when 360 degree is done, so 360 degree tool as a method is nothing but if I'm assessing my 360 degree, then it should be like one level up, one level down, peer level, and either internal or external customer level. That's 360, 90, 90, 90, 90. But it caters to everyone, senior managers, subordinates, customers, into the employee performance. I'm not seeing many organizations do it. Few organizations who does it, but don't take a full use of it. It's also an instrument to close the gap between the workforce and an organization that is today. So as I mentioned in the previous slide, that organizational contribution is becoming more and more evident in your KRA KPIs. Maybe the time you go to a job, your HR head might say, you know what, why don't you find a tool where these things can be done completely automated? I am told that today, HR scorecard was always there, but they're creating more like a PM scorecard, which is performance management scorecard, which is helping people to know where people stand even before the actual performance management happens weekly. That's the game changer that is saying. And again, it's based on skills and competencies. A data-based and technology-driven PM system will boost employee morale and performance of the organization. It will improve productivity undoubtedly. It will overcome communication hurdles. So for example, I as a supervisor, when I used to go and assess a candidate or a person reporting into me, I may have biases. Systems never. It mitigates conflict. So a typical example would be, no sir, you told me this is what is to be done. I did what you said, but still you're saying I cannot rate you this. So that mitigates conflicts. If you're doing this, then this is your rating. It saves time mostly. I don't have to spend, I still remember my first organization when I did my first KRN KPI assessment. My data collation took me 1.5 months. Today, company doesn't have that much of time. Ensures consistent performance is more important and helps to identify skill gaps from where the LNOD need comes. Yep. Important for upskilling of the managers. Today they have, organizations like Google, Apple, Microsoft, the bigger ones, the $1 trillion, Amazon. Amazon has a LNOD scorecard for even their logistics truck driver anywhere. So whether he is implementing all those core values in the organization or not is measured by the LNOD team. Toyota is another organization which does the same. It actually, by doing this, it enables employees to develop the skill. So if my data is right, Sandoz, which is part of Novo Nordisk company, from a pharma perspective, has a very simple scorecard. Every month, whether you're into operations or HR or sales or manufacturing or R&D or plant or corporate office, they have a simple mechanism. So after every week, this is your target, which was supposed to be delivered by you. Once you punch in the data, it goes to your supervisor. Your supervisor approves or disapproves, and based on that, your ratings is being done. And based on that, the need for LNOD is created or LND is created. And LNOD also gives you a relation to HR planning. I mean, okay, what shall I do? What kind of training should I do? Should I focus on workforce needed in the near future or not? To be very honest with you, in today's workshop, when I go for training and development to have their thought process for a 1 day or a 2 day training, you know, they are more into experiential training right now. They are moving away from those PPT based training. And that's what the workforce is looking for into. The key benefits, I would say, the first thing is the need. So if an employee is lacking performance, why, what, and how, and to boost the morale of the employee or to boost the productivity of the employee, again, why, what, and how. That's how, the Simon Sinek's golden circle. It enhances employee job satisfaction. It reduces employee turnover rate. So I was told, and I was doing a survey with one of my friend in one of the organization as a consultant, and they were willing to see how happy employees were. So based on this, when they understood that employees were unhappy, that's the first thing that came out. Then they went to understand whether employees were unhappy with training or, you know what came out? Nobody knew where their career path was. I mean, I joined as an executive. How soon can I become a manager, or how soon can I become a senior manager, or what is my employee gradation path? And that, so if an employee doesn't know where he or she is going to land, he's going to leave that. So that employee turnover rate, it reduces. It improves the risk management capabilities. That's one of the biggest thing. We have exit interviews. If you have friends in HR, just ask them, how many people actually work with exit interviews? In my answer, no, they don't. Why? Because it's a very painful area. If a person has given a negative feedback for an instance, they are of the opinion. If you go to Google, and again, this was told to me by one of my friends who works as a consultant in Google US, they say if a person is leaving an organization, they ensure that the exit is the most happier moment of that employee. I was working with Hero Group, and that Hero Group, when I left Hero Group, they had a 22-page exit interview process. And whatever I filled up, I had an interview with the HOD stating me, okay, the first question was, Gabriel, is anything relating to employees, anything relating to performance, your pay packet or anything? Now, a lot of you may think that, you know what, Gabriel, what is the point now discussing with salaries if they are not happy? But remember, salary is the outcome of what they are saying. Any organizations today across the globe has the same kind of a problem. But if we can take it in advance, the exit interview would be less painful for the employees. That's what typically my thought process are. I cannot talk about it from an organizational perspective, but then as an individual, when I had teams, I handled teams, I used to ensure that their exit time, whatever be the company policy, 60 days, 45 days, 90 days, I ensured that that was the most happiest time they've ever spent, because that's how they have a chance of coming back.